What I hear a lot is, I cannot decentralize my power because my community doesn't know how to make the decision. I'm like, dude, like, you're the founder.
Yeah.
If your community does not know your project, that's like 100% on you.
Welcome to How We Build Web3 in Africa. This is where we explore the biggest ideas, we share insights, and reveal the biggest and latest developments in Web3 within Africa. This is how we inspire the next generation of builders. This is how we level the playing field. I'm Daniel Akpobare, and I'm here with George Nsomi. George, how are you doing?
I'm great, Daniel. It's another beautiful day here on the continent of Africa. And today we have a special guest. Her name is Alexa, who is a legal professional gone tech. She's also a DAO and governance and operations framework specialist. And she's also specialized in teaching the world about DAOs and education. Alexa is also on a mission to bring more females, legal professionals, to the industry. And she wants to challenge the lack of diversity and inclusion in the industry. Alexa, welcome to the show.
Sure. Well, thank you very much for having me here. It's a pleasure to be here and talk to you guys. And I'm also very looking forward to, you know, seeing other of your episodes and learning more about Web3 with you.
Yeah, that's a beautiful one. You know, what's interesting here is the way I met Alexa. By the way, we met on LinkedIn, and it was actually a post from Thanos that got us connected. And a mutual friend of ours, Zlatan, he made a comment and say, "Hey, Alexa, what do you think about this post from Thanos?" And I saw her post. It was really beautiful, right? I love the structure of a response. And I slide into a DM, right? And we got talking because she's really passionate. You can see from her comment that she's really passionate about DAOs. And it's really what made us reach out to her also and say, you know what, we're starting this podcast. She should be one of the first guests to come in to talk to us about DAO. So which is a perfect way to segue into the first set of topic. Well, what is DAO, right?
What is a DAO? A DAO is a decentralized autonomous organization, right? So decentralized parts stands for that the organization and the community that is building the project is not jurisdiction specific, right? So it's global. And anyone who wants to join is free to do so. The autonomous part refers to how we usually describe it is the code of the smart contracts that executes the decisions made by the community, and all the decisions related to the project are executed autonomously, without any need for human, without any need for human involvement. And as a nature in the DAO is the fact that it removes that need for the central authority, the central person, or the central theme that we are very much used to in the centralized traditional world. And the organization mm-hmm. part stands for a community-based, community-focused project, an initiative that is made by the people for the people that share a vision and mission and what they want to change, solve, or bring new to the world.
Alexa, thank you so much for that introduction to DAOs. In the context of Africa and even from where you're from, why are DAOs so important? And can you give us an example of how the operational structure makes it a nice social responsibility?
Yeah, sure. So I think like DAOs bring some different possibilities that decentralized world just cannot. A DAO by nature is a decentralized organization, meaning that is accessible to just about anyone who wants to get involved in the industry, in the project. And the DAOs allow people to contribute to the project with the skills they possess, right? So usually, if you look at the traditional world, traditional companies, you have a box to fit in, and you know you need to specific skills, and you have a specific job to do. While in a DAO, you can actually find yourself, and understand what you like, and you can be as creative as you are, and discover more than that. And I believe that DAOs, what they bring, they bring a lot more possibilities for people to actually find their place and find a job, right? Because you're not committed to a specific jurisdiction. You're not committed to any other constraints that a traditional world has, right? Such as usually, you know, you're worth more if you have a fancy school degree or if you have some crazy diploma, this, that. So that what, or if you worked for some badass company before, right? So that's what counts, not your actual skill set, the knowledge and the values you can bring. And in a DAO, that's all that matters, right? So you're an avatar, you know, your username on Discord, on Twitter and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And people know you by what you can do and what you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that brings a lot more freedom, a lot more different freedoms for people, and allows them to get involved. And DAOs operate in a way that, as I mentioned, they're accessible to just about anyone. They're inclusive, though there are some issues with the diversity and inclusion, but I won't go there in this question. But it does allow a lot more than traditional world can, and they can solve a lot of the problems of Web 2 that Web 2 itself cannot handle. And DAOs operate in a manner that you, as a community member, you have the ability to put a proposal out for voting if you think that there are different, that something can be or should be done differently. You can contribute by with your skills, with your knowledge, with what you know. You can vote on things that are happening in the DAO, for example, whether you agree or don't agree with certain partnership, or do you agree or disagree with a certain business decision to be made, or whether who will be in the representative team, how the budget, how the financials would be managed and used. So everything that is concerning the project, the operations and the future of the DAO, you can get involved in and you can contribute to when you're a member.
Yeah, I really like that, even that small illustration you've given of it doesn't really matter, like all these other titles that we've given ourselves. It's actually what you contribute to the DAO and the potential that you get as a user. I sympathize with that, and I believe that this is the power that was previously unable to be harnessed by the population. And Daniel, just and one of the things you said actually, which is really interesting, is how for the first time, you know, when I look at a DAO personally, I think of how the communities in Africa, when you look at table banking, the structure and the decentralized authority of decision making that happens within the community is now being replicated and enabled on a technology platform. And what do you think about that, Daniel?
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing, like she said. It's giving opportunities to people where they normally wouldn't be able to have that, mostly because of where they're from. Secondly, because of maybe due to inferiority complex, right? There's a host of other reasons why people wouldn't have been able to be involved in the space. So I from my own perspective, I recognize the value that DAO presents. But like you know, the way we connected on LinkedIn is actually even premised on the shortcomings of DAO. Again, right? I want to start with the fact that I believe in the general philosophy of DAOs, but it makes it a really scary place for the members, because there's no legal framework to sort of encompass how DAO should be operated. I'm not a legal guy, but I know enough to know that it falls within a gray area. And I think that's most of what you do to help founders to be able to avoid such areas. Can you sort of talk a little about that first, please?
So just to take a step back and explain a bit like why DAOs are facing those different regulatory challenges. So DAOs are, if you look at the traditional world, right? So we have different type of structures that are legally recognized, LLCs, LTDs, nonprofits, this and that, right? So they're recognized by the law and they have a clear structure and you have the law outlines certain rules, procedures, processes to follow if you want to register that entity and how that entity should be managed once you establish it. However, when it comes to DAO, DAOs are invisible to the law. They're a very novel structure. The first one was the DAO in 2016. And they had a sort of fallback, right? So that potentially hindered a bit of the growth and understanding of how DAOs operate and recognizing them actually legally. But with the recent boom of the industry, DAOs started getting a lot more attention. As I mentioned, last year, August, we had 700 DAOs. And this year, August alone, we had over 6,000 DAOs that were registered on the DAO. .io, but that website does not actually register all the DAOs. So there is, I heard the math, there was over 30,000 DAOs in the space.
Wow.
Right. So
that's a lot.
There is a hype. Yeah, that's really a lot of DAOs, right? Loads of organizations. So what happened, we experienced the hyper growth of the industry, but a regulatory framework is a bit behind. But it takes time to build, to understand the technology first in the organization so you can build proper regulatory frameworks around them. So DAOs are, yeah, still invisible to the law. And what happens in traditional law, if you don't have the certain structure, what you do is look at the one that is closest to it. In DAO case, that's a general partnership. The general partnership is defined as a business arrangement of two or more people that equally share profits, losses, and liabilities. So since DAOs are not legally recognized, they are unable to enter into any sort of legal agreement. They are unable to pass any KYC, AML, and CFD requirements as they do not have any legal standing. Not having legal standing means they have no legal protection. So going back to the general partnership issue, what happens is that if someone commits any illicit activities with the DAO assets, everyone involved in that organization are equally liable for the actions of that one individual, and they're liable with their personal unlimited liabilities, meaning that the people are responsible with their personal assets if there is no legal structure around them. And that is kind of the softest scenario, right? Then you go further into legal and tax implications. And then from there, if the DAO activities fall under regulatory activities and the organization does not have necessary paperwork, that's again another set of illegal issues and risks the members can be subject to. So currently we have around, I think, 5-6 states that actually have recognized DAOs. The first one was Wyoming, early 2021. It was a great step forward towards recognizing and understanding DAOs, but unfortunately, it needs a bit of a rework and improvement. Then the Marshall Islands followed. The legislative framework is a bit improved, but still needs a bit to catch up on. And we have other jurisdictions such as El Salvador that recognize DAOs the same time as they recognized Bitcoin as a legal tender. Then we have Panama, but Panama DAO does not come without any challenges. And we also have Tennessee in the States. In Europe, still we don't have a country that is that has recognized DAOs as organizations in a legal sense, though UK has been mentioning that they're looking to establish a framework around DAOs, but we are yet to see that. So, you know, how one can mitigate those legal and compliance risks, considering that there is no actual proper framework and in majority of the countries. So what usually happens is that you can incorporate an entity that represents a DAO. That is usually an LLC or a nonprofit foundation, depending on the country and on the type of the business and the organizations, where the members are from, where the founders are from. So those are all the things that one needs to take into consideration when assessing which jurisdiction would it be the best to have that entity incorporated. That is important for the reason that by incorporating that entity that represents DAO, those unlimited personal liabilities from the community members are mitigated, and the centralization and other risks are mitigated from the founders themselves, and of course it protects the project until a certain degree as well. There are many conversations going around whether registering that entity is actually centralizing the DAO. In my personal opinion, it's not, for the reason that you're not centralizing an entity by incorporating it. What you're doing, you're actually protecting your community and you're protecting your project, you're protecting the investments, you're protecting the assets. But what matters is how you actually operate. Because if you operate in a centralized manner and if your operations are too centralized, that is what is centralizing the project and the DAO, not the entity itself, because the entity there is just a tool, a protection tool for the members, for the community, for the founders, because what many think is that they shouldn't be paying taxes. They shouldn't take any legal implications in consideration, this and that. And yes, we're building on chain, but we don't live in Mars, right? So we do have to follow the traditional law, liked it or not, for our own safety, future, and the building that we are really all here for. So that type of legal protection is something that supports the scalability of the project, the growth, and the protection of the community. It's not an ideal solution, but is the best that we have now, and it's a tool that can help protect the community members, the project, the founders from unlimited liabilities and centralization risks.
Well, that's a good one, because from what I'm hearing right now, if you register an LLC, it gives you some kind of protection from just having a DAO run by itself because of any future sort of rulings that could come out in the future that could affect the DAO later on. It kind of brings me to this question quickly. It's just a follow-up with the one I asked earlier. Is there an importance of what should follow first? So if I create a DAO first, then go ahead to make an LLC, does that matter? Or I really have to start with an LLC before I move to creating a DAO?
Well, that really depends on, you know, what stage the funds are associated, right? I mean, you can, you know, having a Discord server and community on Discord server does not really mean that, you know, you have already funds associated and whether there are already legal implications, right? But once you're actually asking members to invest money in the project to buy either a token or an NFT, well, that's the point when you actually have to start. Actually, before that, you have to start thinking about legal and compliance implications on the project, on the members, and, you know, on yourselves as founders as well, right? Because what matters is to take all those into consideration, have a consultation with an expert, with a legal advisor, and understand what steps need to be taken in order to protect the project, the community from liabilities. What we've been seeing recently are some cases of DAOs that are that have been assessed by the CFT, and that have taken certain actions against the project on the basis of a DAO being a general partnership, doing unregistered ICO, promising high returns, promising many things. And yeah. They have taken into consideration the people that were active voters. So having unregistered ICO can bring a lot of complications and risks for those involved. So I do believe that before going into that, it's very important to have an expert legal consultation and make sure you're aware of the risks.
Okay, thank you very much. George?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, Alexa. One question I've always wondered is, you know, when you have a DAO, there usually is some people who may have some more expertise within that space. How do you take into account, for example, if shouldn't a DAO have maybe some skewed voting towards people who either have a larger tenure or they have more expertise? How do you go about that structure of decision making?
Well, in my experience and opinion, having a skill does not really guarantee that you will actually do something about it. And in many cases, it's a lot more important to have the will and to have the attitude that you want to do something and that you want to contribute and make the change. Having an expertise in a project on that team of representatives, it's an asset, 100%. But if you have an expert on the team that is not contributing, that's not an asset, right? So, I don't think that the expertise, the experience, and professional knowledge automatically determines whether someone is capable and compatible for being in that team. Since there are many, you know, freeloaders on those teams that I've met, and that I have met mostly as me being a community member of some of the projects. And when it comes to who should be on that team, should be the people that are genuinely interested in contributing to that project, making a difference, and pushing the project forward and working for its good future. When it comes to what I hear a lot is, I cannot decentralize my power because my community doesn't know how to make the decision. I'm like, dude, like, you're the founder.
Yeah.
If your community does not know your project, that's like 100% on you. It's not on the community. If you write to tech white paper and a Verjo cannot read that, right? So if you want to, you know, to be cool because you can write like, you know, super complex tech docs, yeah, go ahead, right? Like, you have that one, but also write the one that an Verjo can read and understand. Because it's in your best interest that the community actually knows and understands your project, because he's going to bring someone onto your project because he's like, oh, this project is really, really cool. You got to check it out. But if someone asks him, they're like, well, honestly, I don't have a clue what the guys are talking about. You know, it seems cool. They have a nice website. You know, I go there. I'm not really sure. I've been there for 3 months. I don't understand the project. You know, that's a failure of a founder of that, you know, team of representatives. And you need to KYC, you need to know your community, and you need to understand the level of education they have on the industry, right? So some people just got in here like yesterday or a week before. Okay, so provide them with some basic materials, how to create a wallet. What is blockchain? What is crypto? What is the DEX? What is this? What is that? Right. So give them that learning opportunity. Break down the project for them. help them understand what your project is about. Because if you give that education to your community, that's a very valuable tool you can give to just about any community member you have. And those people will come back and they will want to keep being your community member because you gave them the chance to learn. But by cutting off someone just because they do not understand the project and the tech, you know, well, to be honest, simply put, that's a BS reason. So, yeah.
Well, I get your point, right? I was actually looking for somewhere where I saw this a post from on LinkedIn, but I just couldn't find it before you're done with what you're saying. Because there was a founder who made a game, and ultimately, ultimately the game failed because it's a DAO, right? And he says most of the reason why the game failed is because he listened to the audience, right, to the community. And it brings up this very important question, and we can end with this, right? It brings up this very important question that you don't go listen to your friend about a medical issue. You don't take the opinion of your friend more than a doctor who is specialized in that area. How do you take the opinions of community members just because they hold your token? And I'm not even talking about those who even have a lot more of the bag, right? Just because they are members and they make really important decisions when they really lack the expertise and the experience to be able to make such important decisions.
Well, I mean, the fact is that you have very different community members, right? So some really know, some, you know, they want to know, but they don't. And those are the challenges that you face with every community. And, you know, that's something that you sign up for when you decide to go to build a decentralized project and when you want to build a community around your vision. And those are some of the things that when you have proper governance mechanisms in place, you can mitigate those risks. And you need to understand the, you know, what level of understanding the community has around the project, around the industry as a whole. Then you need to understand the background. I mean, of course, you cannot have you cannot know the bios and resumes of all of your community members, but be involved, be present, KYC again, know your community. And yeah. If you keep encountering the issues where people are putting out proposals that are just not good, so there is you can solve that by, for example, bring a manual, or a requirement. Okay, so we value each and every input and every opinion, but for the sake of the health and the life of our project, in order for you to put the proposal out, these are the things you need to do beforehand, right? So you need to, if you're thinking that, you know, this tech change would be fantastic for the project, okay? So did you actually talk with an expert, or you watch YouTube video and came to that idea? What is the potential budget, right? Did you maybe explore who could be the people that could bring that change to life? Can we talk to them, right? So they can they come to a community call and tell us, okay, so this can be done within this time frame, within this budget, and you know, the pros and cons are this and that. So those are the ways how you can actually filter out all the BS that you get, because that also shows, right, so how someone actually thought through the proposal, or they got inspired by a YouTube video and thought they can save the world by pushing that out. And also give a place for the community to discuss, right? So discourse, like the forum, is a great place to do so, right? So people can post their ideas, they get the community feedback, and see how the community also responds to that. because there are always people that know a bit more about a certain topic, about a certain domain, and they will respond to that proposal. And after a few comments and observations, you would be able to filter out whether the proposal is good to go, good to move forward, or, you know, it needs a bit of rework or benched for a while until it gets improved. So allowing space for discussion and for people to actually be involved and understand how a contribution to the DAO actually works, it's a lot healthier in an environment because people do feel empowered to contribute and to get involved, and also filters out everything, you know, that might not be best at the moment.
Yeah, that's a good one, Alexa. And really, I think from what you're saying, it's up to the DAO to create a framework that makes it possible for them to have a decentralized organization with accounting for expertise. It's a beautiful one here, Alexa Mill. We really love your input here. It's been an expository one. You've opened our eyes to what DAO is, the value it can present, and how we can circumvent any legal issues that will come in the future. Thanks again for jumping on this podcast. We really appreciate it. I don't know if George has done anything.
Alexa, this is definitely not the last time we'll have you. And we'd love for our listeners to find you on your social media. Do you have your LinkedIn, Twitter, or preferred accounts?
Yeah, so I'm usually actually discoverable everything by DAOLexa. It's DAOLEXA. Or Alexa Mel, I'm fully doxxed on all platforms. And I would also like to thank you for having me here and for inviting me to come and talk about DAOs and share what I've learned so far. And I hope it will definitely help to some to learn more about DAOs, understand the industry, and what to pay attention to if they're looking to get involved in a DAO as builders or members. And I would also like to add that all these are my personal experiences and opinions, and that nothing can be construed as a financial legal.
Yeah, definitely. That's correct. That's the way to go. I like that. So ladies and gentlemen, you guys have heard that. Alexa Mill, thanks for coming in. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.